Irish flavour to start the hour today. Moya Brennan and Show Me, first of all, in the Pogues with the Thousands of Sailing. It's 8:17, the full English breakfast show. A racing pigeon from Belgium has set a new record after being sold for £1.6 million. £1.6 million for a pigeon. A new Kim, a two-year-old female, was initially put up for auction for just €200, but was bought by a bidder from China on Sunday for the record amount. Kurt van der Valver, whose family bred and owned the pigeon, said they were in shock at the news, according to Reuters. The previous record holder was a four-year-old male who sold for €1.25 million. Champion racer Armando was nicknamed the Lewis Hamilton of pigeons.
I saw this, yeah.
After the Formula One world champion was retired and had already fathered a number of chicks when he was put up for sale in 2019. And New Kim won a number of competitions in 2018, including national middle distance races, but has since retired. Like Armando, New Kim was bought after a bidding war between two buyers from China, where pigeon racing has grown in popularity in recent years. Is it televised?
I haven't seen it.
Televised pigeon
racing.
But why
not? Why not?
You'd have to have a drone, wouldn't you, following them? Racing pigeons can carry on having chicks until they're about 10, and it's expected the New Kim's new owners will use her for breeding. The auctioneers said this made the sale even more unusual. These record prices are unbelievable because this is a female, said the CEO and founder of the auction house, Pippa. Usually, a male is worth more than a female because it can produce more offspring. Belgium has long been a home for pigeon enthusiasts, with more than 20,000 pigeon breeders in the country.
Are they then they're normal pigeons, but they're just trained, right, to be racers?
Just flap.
Or are they a special...
Flap, faster,
special
faster.
...special breed that have to be...
Well, I presume they're specially bred. When you get a good one, you want to breed from it because the little ones will be good as well.
Flying rats, aren't they?
Flying rats?
Pigeons.
About rat racing. There's enough of those in Nice. Get them going around the port. The Rat Olympics. I was looking forward to Monday morning's pop quiz.
Why?
Nah, just pulling your leg.
I've made it quite easy. Starting off with, on this day in 1985, which was the same month in Britain as 36 of Britain and Ireland's top pop musicians gathered in Notting Hill Studios to form Band Aid and record the song
Live
Do
Aid.
They Know It Christmas. Yeah, I'm just setting the scene.
Okay.
This is November. Okay, can you tell me what was at number one in the US charts? November 1985, it was a song by Starship.
We Built This City.
Correct. Can you tell me what number it got to in the UK charts? It stayed, it did
12.
A 2-week run. Well done. Correct.
God, that was a completely random guess.
Okay, question number two. On this day in 1979, Paul McCartney released which Christmas track?
Wonderful Christmas Time.
Well done.
What and Christmas,
finally,
Christmas.
On this day in 1974, John Lennon's only solo number one was what?
Mind Games?
No, the year before Mind Games was the album was released in 1973.
It wasn't Imagine, that was earlier, wasn't it?
Take your time.
Number Nine Dream.
No, Whatever Gets You Through the Night.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay, didn't know that.
Oh, you do now.
You learn something every day, don't you?
Certainly do.
It's a very good programme about John Lennon on a few weeks ago. It's still on the iPlayer on the BBC if you want to catch up with that.
Riviera Radio. Business.
Morning.
Good morning.
Got square eyes today, have you?
Listen, I watched a little bit of the golf. It wasn't a classic Masters, I didn't think. I mean, Dustin Johnson, of course, was imperious. He was looked like a clear winner. A little bit of a wobble, I think, was it on the fourth and the fifth, maybe, where we had bogeys there. But beyond that, he looked like a clear winner. I miss the patrons, I miss the sunshine, I miss the azaleas. It just wasn't a classic Masters.
I didn't miss the cries of get in the hole.
No, that's true, and all that mashed potato business.
But it was shaping up to be really good after the second round, wasn't it? There's all those players up there, and you thought this is going to be a real nail biter, but he just sort of walked away with it in the third and fourth rounds, didn't he, really?
Rory could have won it, Rory had a disastrous first round, I think, of 75. He was in fantastic form, and even with that disaster and major problems, he's not far away from his green jacket, I don't think.
And poor old Tiger at the 12th on the final round. I mean, that was 10 on the par 3 12th.
That was absolutely incredible. Was he in the water twice? Oh, yeah. Not more than that.
The shot I saw, he was in the bunker. He went straight from the bunker into the water.
Why are you laughing?
Well, it was quite funny, really.
But... I tell you what is amazing about Tiger's round is, even after that 10, did you see what he did after
five
that?
Five birdies, yeah.
Absolutely incredible. Mm. His determination, his focus, his willpower is absolutely incredible. With a 10 on the scorecard, I think it was still under par for the tournament, wasn't he?
There was a lot of good golf. I mean, Cameron Smith looked pretty good, didn't he, the Australian?
Yeah, he's good. He's good on the par fives, isn't he? He's good at that second shot into the par fives. He's certainly a talent to watch for in the future.
It's all over for Lefty, though, isn't it? Busted flush.
No.
Straight into
back.
The bunker on 18.
He will be back in great shape come April next year. Not too long to wait for the next Masters.
And hopefully we'll have the crowds back. Okay, I mustn't rabbit on about golf for the entire session. Let's talk about the markets. Good week last week, and it's continued in Asia this morning.
Yeah, very much so. Investors, I think, have been spending much of the past week looking through the dark near-term virus risk to the brighter vaccine horizon. We should remember, of course, the coronavirus data still is very alarming. Infections have been accelerating at a rapid rate. Containment measures have been intensifying. If you look at the figures around the world now, 53.4 million confirmed cases. Deaths now stand at a tragic 1.3 million. In the last few days, we've seen the US, Japan, Russia and the UK all registering record daily coronavirus cases. Prospect of tighter restrictions in a number of regions loom large. Growth forecasts for the fourth quarter have been tumbling, but markets trying to look beyond that to think about the vaccine. And perhaps we saw the first true tangible step towards normality last week as Pfizer and BioNTech announced the clinical trial results for its COVID-19 vaccine candidate. Lots of people getting excited about what that's going to mean in terms of the speed of the economic recovery. The markets reacted to that. Certainly at the start of the week, sentiment was strong. Stock surged. The MSCI All Country Index hit a record high. Bond yields jumped. Crude US dollar rallied. The cost to protect corporate debt against default in both the US and Europe sank. Investors bet there was reduced need to shelter in safe haven assets. So we saw this rotation into value, into cyclical sectors, helping Europe to outperform last week. There was also early signs, perhaps, this stay-at-home trade that's been prevalent, of course, during the course of COVID may start to unwind. And we saw smaller caps outperforming the tech mega caps. For the week, the S&P 500 was up 2.2%. Europe was where the major action was. Stock 600 was up 5.1%. In fact, marking the best two-week rally we've seen since May 2001. Looks like we're going to get a decent start on the European bourses this morning after a strong session in Asia. Currently calling FTSE up 44 points. DAX over in Frankfurt up 111 points. CAC 40 in Paris up 55 points.
Landmark trade deal signed by 15 nations to form the world's largest trading bloc, Hank.
Huge. 15 Asia Pacific countries signing, as you say, one of the biggest trade deals in history in a move that will reduce barriers that covers a third of the world's population and economic output. The regional comprehensive economic partnership was a decade in the making, brings the powerhouses of China, Japan and South Korea together with the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. I think we've also got Australia and New Zealand in there as well, bringing them into this formal trading zone with agreements around tariffs, around customs, services, investment, rules of origin. What does it mean? Well, victory for global trade. We've been seeing these country-centric approaches. We've had Brexit, we've had America First in the United States, all raising fears of deglobalization and what it can mean. This has seen as good news, I think, for global growth prospects. And you could also argue it reduces the US's influence over Asian trading rules as well.
And just extends China's influence in the region, though, doesn't it?
It really does. China, of course, the powerhouse there, been leading the recovery out of the pandemic. Strong growth numbers coming through from them this morning, an important trading component, and perhaps a shifting global dynamics being displayed as they put this partnership together.
And as I understand this, it's going to be between 10 and 20 years, though, before all the tariffs are phased out.
Yeah, it paves the way. That's the important element. It takes a long time in order to get to this point. It's got to be ratified and then it's got to be implemented. And that's going to take a number of years to happen.
Makes you think, though, that with the European Union, US-Mexico-Canada agreements, and now this new regional comprehensive economic partnership, you know, if you're not in one of those, you're going to struggle, aren't you? Which leads us on to Brexit.
You can see where you're going with this one. It doesn't stop, of course, the likes of Australia and New Zealand doing deals with the UK, just governing rules within those partnership areas. But as you say, the truth is that there are some big blocks being formed, and the freedom to of trade of goods and services within those regions over time will make them an attractive place to do business, and you need to have access to those markets.
Right, and we keep being told it's a massive week for Brexit, but this is it really, isn't it now?
Clock is ticking, and the fears are, of course, rising that a no-deal Brexit will play out, I suppose, as we get closer towards the true deadline coming through. The reality is we'll need to see something in the next week or so, I suppose, because there won't be time for parliaments to ratify any agreement before the transition period ends. But the music remains negative, but economic pragmatism, we think, will prevail and a deal will eventually happen. Been lots of, lots of people leaving Downing Street in the last few days, and Boris Johnson told to stay at home, ironically, in Downing Street under track and trace. But I still think that the prospect for a deal is certainly possible. It's certainly achievable, but by no means inevitable.
That made for very interesting reading over the weekend, didn't it? And do you think that the removal of Dominic Cummings and Lee Kane from Downing Street will have any bearing on the talks?
Well, you could argue that. There have been arch-Brexiteers, there's no doubt about that. They've been at the heart of the thing. And the resetting of government could involve compromises in Europe in order to get a deal done before the transition ends. So one would suspect there is a link between the removal of some of those officials and the potential for a deal to break out.
Is Princess Nut-Nut going to get involved, do you think?
Who's Princess Nut-Nut?
Well, this is the thing that angered Boris Johnson, because apparently Lee Kane and Dominic Cummings were referring to Carrie Symes and emails as Princess Nut-Nut.
Okay, well, I won't get involved. I won't get involved in discussing her views or role in the process.
Because she does seem to have a lot of influence. I mean, of course, she's a former Tory party advisor, so she knows what she's talking about. And
She knows what she's talking about. She's been in the heart of government for a prolonged period of time. She does have many contacts and the ear of many MPs who work with her and interact with her, and no doubt she passes that on to the boss.
Right, so finally, a quick word about China. Good figures coming through.
Yeah, strong numbers once again showing the V-shaped recovery remains on track in the world's second largest economy. For October, industrial production rose 6.9%. Retail sales, watch that very closely, becoming a much more important component of China's growth profile. That accelerated to 4.3% in October from 3.3% in September. Fixed asset investment remains positive. It was up 1.8% for the first 10 months of the year. Unemployment rate inched down to 5.3%. Just look at those numbers and compare them to what you see elsewhere in the world. No doubt China powering ahead, the only major region to generate growth during the course of this year, and expected strong figures next year puts them in good shape and likely to propel them to become the world's largest economy somewhere in the next decade.
Foreign exchanges, please.
Pound against dollar coming in at 1.32 this morning. Euro dollar coming in at 1.18. Going to get 1 euro, 11 and a half cents for your British pound this morning.
We had our money's worth this morning, didn't we?
Really worked me hard, didn't you?
Yeah. Good. That's what you need on a Monday morning, you know, get you into gear for the tough week ahead.
Quite right.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good day.
Hang Potts and Barclays.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online. This is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Leister has the top stories across the Riviera.
Police have been deployed and line one of the tramway in Nice came to a standstill in the Saint Roch district after shots were fired on Sunday morning. The area was cordoned off after a dispute between neighbours led to shots being fired. A 67-year-old man was taken to hospital and police have opened an investigation to determine the exact circumstances. In other news, local traders in Nice have demonstrated against COVID-19 restrictions, which they say are killing their businesses. At the weekend, 1,500 people gathered at Place Garibaldi in Nice. Restaurant owners denounced the decision to close bars and restaurants despite many respecting barrier gestures and accusing the government of taking the decision despite little, if any, data to prove that cases of contamination were more frequent in bars and restaurants than elsewhere. Meanwhile, churchgoers also gathered in front of the Notre Dame Church in Nice on Sunday, demanding the resumption of religious services, which had been banned to the public since the introduction of lockdown on October the 30th. 250 worshippers gathered to demonstrate peacefully in Nice, as several similar demonstrations took place in front of churches across France. Since lockdown, churches have effectively remained open, but ceremonies with the public are prohibited due to health restrictions. On a national level, a petition launched on the website pourlamesse.fr has so far gathered 100,000 signatures. France's Prime Minister Jean Castex is to meet this morning with religious representatives in order to discuss current regulations under which ceremonies could be held again in places of worship depending on the health situation. At the weekend, 8 new cases of COVID-19 were declared in Monaco, bringing the total number of residents affected by the coronavirus to 545. 18 people are currently hospitalised and 67 are being followed by the Home Monitoring Centre. Meanwhile, a meeting held by the Joint COVID-19 Monitoring Committee here in the Principality has taken place at the Ministry of State. For nearly 2 hours, the Prince's government and representatives of the National Council discussed the decisions taken and to be taken in the context of the health crisis and its social and economic consequences. Figures show that even if contaminations are on the rise, for the time being, Monaco's incidence rate remains lower than that of neighbouring regions. The Joint Committee looked at future developments in testing in the Principality, with the government announcing the deployment of antigenic tests for the public, which will be available from next week in some pharmacies. The curfew measures, which came into effect on November the 1st, are considered to be adapted to the situation in the Principality, protecting the population while ensuring the operation of many shops in compliance with health regulations. The government and National Council have agreed on the importance of continuing economic support, with the Economic Recovery Support Commission continuing its support missions for businesses impacted by the health crisis. The next joint monitoring committee will take place on November the 24th. And meanwhile, this morning, His Serene Highness Prince Albert II of Monaco will inaugurate the brand new P3 laboratory at the Scientific Centre of Monaco. Equipped with state-of-the-art machine, this new equipment will significantly increase PCR testing capacities in the fight against COVID-19 in the Principality. According to the French Health Ministry data published on Saturday, the number of confirmed new COVID-19 cases and deaths in France rose sharply in the last 24 hours. France registered 32,095 new COVID-19 cases over the previous 24 hours. Deaths in hospital in France from COVID-19 rose by 359 over a 24-hour period to reach a total of 44,246. In an interview published today, France's Health Minister, Olivier Véran, has said that he wants to be optimistic and that even if we have not yet conquered the virus, everything suggests that we have passed a peak. In the interview, Véran also mentions the potential arrival of a future vaccine against COVID-19, adding that we must not get carried away, warning that once all the data from the study has been sent to the American and European health authorities, France will have to check them. A recent Ipsos poll conducted in 15 countries showed that the French are the most reluctant to be vaccinated in the coming months. Many, however, are still ignoring strict lockdown rules. Over the weekend, the organisers of a party that brought together hundreds of people near Paris in defiance of the lockdown were taken into police custody. The two men were arrested for organising the party in a private residence on Friday night in total disregard of health rules in the Val d'Marne just outside Paris. Alerted by residents, police intervened to interrupt but were assaulted. Unhappy with the intervention, partygoers threw bottles at the police officers. The officers then used gas grenades to disengage them and evacuated the guests. One man was injured during the party and taken to hospital. He later tested positive for COVID-19. In a press release, the Prefecture of Police invited all those present to get tested as soon as possible and to isolate themselves, at least until they received the results of their tests. Finally, a silk shoe that belonged to Marie Antoinette, the last Queen of France who was executed during the French Revolution, has gone up for auction with a starting price of €10,000. The shoe bears her name on its heel, and she is thought to have worn it regularly during daily life at the palace. During the French Revolution, the shoe ended up in the possession of Marie-Amélie Lichavin, a close friend of the Queen's head chambermaid, and whose husband was later killed by the guillotine. Her family held onto it for generations before it came to auction 227 years after her death.
Riviera Radio, sports news.
Ça va, mon chou?
Ça va, ça va.
Golf. World number one Dustin Johnson's won his first Masters title with an emphatic win at the Augusta National. Johnson finished with a record-breaking low score of 20 under par after posting a final round of 68 to win by 5 shots from Cameron Smith of Australia and Sungjae Im of South Korea. He really ran away with it, didn't he? A final round charge from Rory McIlroy came too late as he finished 9 shots back and tied for 5th. Defending champion Tiger Woods had a nightmare at Amen Corner as he carded a 10 on the par 3 12th, but he recovered with 5 birdies to finish on 1 under par. I really felt for Tiger watching him play that hole. He went straight from the bunker into the water and nearly fell over in the process as well. It's a bit like my golf. Formula One, Lewis Hamilton's won a record-equalling 7th World Championship with victory in the Turkish Grand Prix on Sunday. Hamilton secured his 94th Grand Prix win in treacherous wet conditions in Istanbul and was overcome with emotion at the end of the race. He said winning 7 Drivers' Championships was simply unbelievable. Sergio Perez finished 2nd in the racing points, with Sebastian Vettel's Ferrari 3rd. Football, the former Liverpool, Spurs and England goalkeeper Ray Clemens has died at the age of 72. He was diagnosed with advanced prostate cancer in 2005 and died peacefully at his home on Sunday, surrounded by his family. Clemens won 5 league titles and 3 European Cups with Liverpool between 1967 and 1981 and made 470 league appearances for the club before joining Spurs, where he clocked up a further 330 appearances. He won 61 England caps during a period where he battled Peter Shilton for the goalkeeper's jersey. The former Liverpool manager Sir Kenny Dalglish said that Clements had been a true legend. Here's more football from BBC Sports.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello, I'm Alistair Ross at BBC Sport, and Senegal's Sadio Mane is grabbing the headlines in Africa after scoring the only goal as they qualify for next year's Africa Cup of Nations with 2 games remaining. A 1-0 win in Guinea-Bissau makes it 4 qualifying wins from 4. In Europe, Leicester's Youri Tielemans scored the opening goal as a Belgium side full of Premier League stars beat England 2-0 in their European Nations League match. The former England winger Chris Waddle felt the hosts rode their luck.
I feel a little bit sorry for England. I thought the performance was very good. But you need a little bit of green. You need a little bit of luck, which Belgium had in my eyes. But, you know, if you're looking at that as a performance-wise, England were far better than Belgium tonight. We know Belgium's got quality in certain departments, and at times they did use that. But overall, the game, Belgium really found it hard to live with the pace of England tonight.
Paul Pogba's been quoted as saying his international breaks away from Manchester United are a breath of fresh air. In what appears to be a sideswipe at his club, he's told a French radio station, the French team is not the same as with the club. We all group together. It is magical. And tributes have been paid to the former Spurs and Liverpool goalkeeper Ray Clements, who's died aged 72, 15 years after being diagnosed with advanced prostate cancer. Striker David Fairclough played alongside him at Anfield.
He means an awful lot to a lot of people. He was such an amazing part of Liverpool's history, particularly throughout the 70s. I think in Liverpool fans' eyes, he'll always be remembered as England's number one. I mean, they used to chant that week in, week out. He was in such competition with Peter Shilton at the time. But the Liverpool fans never let Ray feel that he was anything but the best.
And for more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Yes, as we were hearing, England have failed to qualify for the Nations League finals after losing 2-0 away to Belgium. 2 early goals by the home side settled the match, with England having plenty of possession but lacking a cutting edge up front. Also on Sunday, Scotland lost their 9-game unbeaten run with a 1-0 away defeat to Slovakia, but Steve Clarke's side is still 1 point clear of the Czech Republic in Group B2 with 1 match to play. Victory against Israel on Wednesday will see them win the group and gain them promotion. Wales beat the Republic of Ireland 1-0 in Group B4 to leave them at the top, but Northern Ireland lost 2-1 in Austria and are threatened with relegation from Group B1. Rugby Union, the Autumn Nations Cup match between France and Fiji on Sunday had to be called off because of a coronavirus outbreak in the Fiji camp. There was one game in the Guinness Pro 14, Munster beat Ospreys 38-22. There are three games tonight. Zebra play Ulster, Cardiff Blues play Benetton and Leinster take on Edinburgh. And in tennis, Rafael Nadal has won his opening match of the ATP Finals in London. Nadal was in ruthless form as he dispatched Andre Rublev 6-3, 6-3. Also on Sunday, Dominic Thiem beat Stefanos Tsitsipas in three sets. Here's the marine weather forecast for coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Isle Maritime in the VAR. The general situation is a depression, 1,013 millibars over the Gulf of Genoa, and high pressure, 1,026 millibars over southwestern France. Winds are northwesterly, force 4 to 6. The sea is moderate. Visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, 1,019 millibars. And the outlook for Tuesday, clear skies, force 2 to 4 variable winds, slight seas, and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are westerly, force 4 to 6. The sea is moderate. Visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,018 millibars. And the outlook for Tuesday, clear skies, force 4 to 6. Northerly winds, moderate seas, and good visibility.
Riviera Radio. Weather.
A bit of rain around this morning, but it should have cleared away by now. Partially cloudy the forecast with moderate northwesterly winds across the VAR. Top temperature 18 degrees. Overnight lows 12 degrees on the coast, 10 degrees inland with clear skies. Tuesday and Wednesday, clear skies. Highs of 16 to 19 degrees. 19 degrees near the end of November. Goodness me.
Very pleasant.
Finally,
scientists at the University of Oxford have claimed that playing video games could have a positive impact on a person's well-being. The scientists found that players experiencing genuine enjoyment from the games saw an improvement in their mental health. The lead author of the study and director of research at the Oxford Internet Institute said the findings show video games aren't necessarily bad for your health, and there are other psychological factors which have a significant effect on a person's well-being.
I had a game of Space Invaders the other day.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, on my iPad.
Oh, I haven't played that for years.
You could get it on your iPad.
Mike Reed left one at our house. Had hours of fun.
It's not quite as good as the arcade version because, you know, obviously it's not as big.
But no, this was a table one we had at home.
I didn't do very well.
Did you not?
I got shot down by those.
Try Pac-Man then.
Yeah, I wasn't fond of Pac-Man. I gave up. I'd given up by then. Yeah. You're up to date. The news is on the website, RivieraRadio.mc.